This Heart of Show Business episode has been brought to you by its sponsor, The Eden Magazine. The Eden Magazine focuses on awareness and educational articles to promote and emphasize humane and environmental content for the next generation of animal lovers. The Eden Magazine is available online and in print to take you to the world of living a healthier, in harmony, and cruelty-free world.
Welcome to the Heart of Show Business. I am your host, Alexia Melocchi. I believe in great storytelling and that every successful artist has a deep desire to express something from the heart to create a ripple effect in our society. Emotion and entertainment are closely tied together. My guests and I want to give you insider access to how the film, television, and music industry works. We will cover dreams come true, the road less traveled, journey beginnings, and a lot of insight and inspiration in between. I am a successful film and television entrepreneur who came to America as a teenager to pursue my show business dreams. Are you ready for some unfiltered real talk with entertainment visionaries from all over the world? Then let's roll sound and action. Well, hello to my listeners of the Heart of Show Business. As you know, I am somebody who never wants to just talk about movies and TV. I want to talk about people doing important things in the world. And somehow anything that has to do with animals, you've seen me on social media, you see me do videos about rescuing dogs, cats, anything I could get my hands on where I can use my voice to save this amazing creatures, I always do. Therefore, it is very, very important that I bring on guests who are doing important work, people who have sanctuaries, people who are saving those animals, who are the voice for the voiceless. And without much ado, I have a very special guest with me today, Kathy Stevens. She is the actual founder and the big boss of the Catskill Animal Sanctuary. And not only that, she used to be a teacher, which is really interesting for me to know. And then, you know, she went, you know, she's going to talk to us about being vegan, about the work that she's doing. And what I found really, really fascinating, I think she's emphasizing on farm animals, which I think those need to be saved too and rescued too. So without much ado, welcome Kathy to my show. It's so lovely to have you.
So happy to be with you and your audience today. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you're so very welcome. So let me ask you something. Like, tell me a little bit about your sanctuary. Where is it? How big is it? And do you, who do you primarily rescue or save or go to the, you know, go to champion so that they can stay alive?
We're 2 hours north of Manhattan, and we're a 150-acre sanctuary for farmed animals only. Horses, cows, goats, sheep, ducks, pigs, chickens, turkeys, geese.
That's interesting. And why, how are you being called upon? Like how do you get those sort of distress calls or those calls where people say to you, you have to save these animals? Is this where you're getting some news that they're out to be put to sleep or slaughtered? I don't want to say the word, but it does happen when it comes to farm animals. What is it that, how does the process work when you are, because obviously you can only save so many. So I'm curious to see how many do you got?
Right. You can only save as many as your resources allow, whether your resources are physical space, human capacity, or money. And any good sanctuary turns down many, 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 many animals every single day, particularly with farm animals. There will never be a way to rescue our way out of this problem when the problem is less about people beating a cow or starving a sheep or something like that than it is about society's unquestioned assumption that eating animals is okay. As long as we have that as our model, then you could open a million sanctuaries tomorrow and you couldn't make a dent in the need. So we take in as many as we can, based on urgency. We just welcomed two Texas Longhorn cattle yesterday from an animal hoarding situation. Their horns are, including their head, they are about 7 feet wide because their horns are 3 feet wide, at least. Massive, came from a hoarding situation, which is how we get a fair number of our animals. We get animals from industry. For example, when a transport truck taking animals to slaughter turns over and there's mayhem and animals all over the place, or when a turkey farm is going to downsize, there's no such thing as humane euthanasia. They will suffocate or gas or crush tens of thousands of birds. So often it'll be a single sanctuary located in proximity to that factory farm that will try to intervene and save as many as possible and then put together a coalition. Sometimes they come when people die and the children don't want the animals. Some in economic downturn, our inbox fills up constantly with requests. So there are 8 or 9 different ways that they come in. And you know, there's an unpredictable nature to the work. You don't really know what the next call or email or text is going to bring. We certainly didn't expect to be taking animals, for example, from a sanctuary, from an animal hoarder masquerading as a sanctuary. So it's wonderful and difficult and heartwarming and, you know, never relentless work, but I wouldn't trade it in.
Oh, I have to say, the only reason, or one of the main reasons where I choose to still stay in Hollywood, and I love artists and I love creativities, but as we all know, it's a struggle. People think it's easy. It's not. But the only reason that I keep doing what I do, I produce movies, I try to get movies off the ground and TV shows off the ground, is exactly for this. I'm like, when I have money, whatever money I choose, do I need a mansion? No. Can I buy some piece of land where I can save some more animals or come to you, Kathy, and write you a big check? Yes, absolutely. That would make me so happy. And honestly, one of the things, and I don't know if people ever ask you this, they ask me that all the time when the people say to me, oh, you know, cats and dogs, but for example, there is a law of, you know, the smaller animal being eaten by the bigger animal and then the bigger animal. And they go, what makes us different as humans? Because, you know, you're going to see that there's going to be the lioness or the jaguar who's going to eat the smaller animal because they have to survive. And they're going to say, well, we have to survive. So how would you say to those people who justify this, us eating those animals as part of the universal, you know, scale of order of things.
There's an extraordinary difference. Animals eat other animals out of necessity, whereas not only do we not need to eat animals in order to survive, there's a growing body, and there has been for some decades of science and medicine that says people who eat a plant-based diet are far healthier than people who eat a meat and dairy based diet. You know, it's one of the leading causes of all kinds of cancer and other health problems, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, etc. So not only do we not need it, not only is it not good for us, not only is there a greater degree of suffering involved when you take a life, when you grow a life for the sole purpose of turning it into something that is consumable by humans. And that being, of course, wants his or her life as much as we want ours, right? Every living being desires life. So not only are all those things true, but our consumption of animals is the leading cause or a leading cause of virtually every environmental challenge we face. So you can argue that this is part of the grand order of things, but my retort would be that animals hunt other animals for necessity, whereas we have a choice. And as the one who is on top, we have an ethical obligation to our fellow beings.
Oh, I just love that, especially in moments where people are so fixated with certain holidays. Easter, let's eat some lamb, you know, Thanksgiving, yeah, let's just go eat turkey. Yeah. Like, can we get rid of that, please? How is the eating of an animal part of a tradition? And if you don't have that, that tradition is going to go away. That makes absolutely no sense to me. As people say, you know, it just really doesn't. Kathy, was there a moment, did you have your, what was your aha moment, obviously from, you know, being a teacher and following that type of career and vocational pursuit? Was there a moment where you're sort of like the light went on and you said, this is what I'm called to do. This is what I have to do.
Yes, I had been a high school English teacher for 10 years and was invited to be the principal of a new high school. And it was a media and technology school, like a specialty high school. And they're called charter schools. People will be familiar with them. And media and technology are not my thing. That's sort of an understatement. I use them out of necessity, but I can't wait to climb a mango tree and sleep, you know, just sleep in a treehouse and throw all those devices away. So it wasn't a good fit. And I turned down the job to my own shock and realized in doing that, that I was sort of done with that chapter of my life and began some soul searching, to use a cliche, and realize that the two things I most care about are, on the one hand, teaching and learning, and on the other hand, animals. And I just started noodling on how I could put those together into a single entity, into a single endeavor that would take me through the next 30 or so years of my life. And I landed on teaching sanctuaries because back then, that was 22 years ago, back then there were a number of sanctuaries, farm sanctuaries, but nobody was doing the education piece in a way that felt to me so vital. Because Alexia, nobody, human beings consider themselves animal lovers. But if you press a person, what they really mean is that they love dogs and cats, or dogs and cats and rabbits, animals who share our homes. And yet those people are not waking up. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I can't wait to torture animals at breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We're not doing this. It's not intentional, but our choice to consume them requires their suffering, their extraordinary suffering. And if I've learned anything, it's that we're all the same. We're all the same in these fundamental ways. We beings of different species, we're all remarkably individual. We all have very rich emotional lives. We know that about our dogs and cats. It's just an uncomfortable thing to think it could be true about a little chicken if we just had one for dinner last night. So, you know, and we all move toward joy. We all move away from pain, and pain and suffering feel no differently to a chicken than they do to a child. So I knew we started from this assumption that people are good and people love animals, and that if you combined an animal sanctuary and an environment where these recovered animals, because they're so resilient and so forgiving, cows walk up and lick people's faces, and turkeys fall asleep in people's laps, and pigs run up to people when we call their names. If you could combine that experience with a sort of very informal classroom environment where the human, in a loving and not judgmental way, is providing information about the implications of eating animals, that would create a lot of vegans. And so that's, we've been doing that for 22 years.
Oh, God bless you. This is so beautiful. And I love the education part of it. I have to say, you always need a wake-up call, right? And I have never been really a meat person by nature. So like I might have had a hamburger every once in a while, but I wasn't in the traditional way somebody who eats meat or likes meat or any of that. But I remember that I was invited to the premiere at the Cannes Film Festival about 7 years ago, I think, for this movie called Oaksha. I don't know if you saw that one.
It was with yes,
yeah, exactly. And it was the red carpet, and here were like all these people, and I literally have goosebumps when I think about it. I was so, because you sometimes you need to see it, right? You really need to see, because like you said, you have no awareness. You go, oh, chickens, you know, you don't know that they're being eaten by us. And so when I saw that movie, I was so profoundly disturbed by it. And I was so shocked. And people were like criticizing, oh, it wasn't like that great of a movie. The script was this. I'm like, people, are you not watching this message? Are you not saying, I never ate anything that was after a living organism again after seeing that movie. And it just, like, I can't unsee what I saw. And I think I love that, you know, sometimes people, and it was told in a moving story. It wasn't a shock factor, because sometimes people do these documentaries for extreme shock value, right?
There are some that are hard to see, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it works in some aspects, but there might some people who may not be ready, and they might go, oh, I can't even watch this. I'm going to turn away. So how can you effectively pass the message in a way that is maybe a little bit more entertaining and not so harsh like Oaksha was, right? So I think what you're doing with the education, if people were in a sanctuary like yours, would come and visit it, would be with the animals, would see, like you said, you know, when the hog comes over and greets you and the turkey sits on you, I think they will go, can I really eat this creature after it sat on my lap?
We have hundreds of stories of people changing on the spot. A man ran up to me in the parking lot. He had just finished a tour, a younger man. He was early 30s. And we locked eyes across the parking lot, and he ran up. Never seen him before. And he grabbed my forearms and he burst into tears. And he said, I get it now. Tell me what to do.
Oh my God.
So sanctuaries are extremely powerful in the way that they allow people to confront the truth and confront the inconsistency in their behavior. You'd never eat a dog in this country. You'd never eat a cat. So is our habit and taste enough to continue to allow you to overlook your most deeply held values, which is what we do. We call ourselves compassionate people, but our choice to eat animals is not compassionate. And sanctuaries have a very unique way of helping people understand that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would add, and I'm curious again, as to how you would challenge that, because these are things that I hear myself all the time. Somebody would say to me, well, what's the difference of me eating a hamburger right now? The animal has already been killed. You know, you go in the supermarket, what am I going to do? Throw all this food away? Like they think, well, what do you want me to do? It's just,
that's a ridiculous question. I mean, it's supply and demand. If we don't buy it, the demand, right? The supply will go away. If there's no demand, there will be no supply. And wouldn't that be a wonderful challenge to have?
Oh, it would be so amazing. But this is sometimes the thinking of people. They go, well, you know, it's too late now. No, it's not. it takes a village, you know.
This is, Alexia, this is the biggest social change movement in the history of the world, because you're not asking white people, for example, white people to change their attitudes and behavior toward non-whites. You're not asking men to change their attitudes and behavior towards women, straight people toward gay people. Not, you are asking every single person on the face of this planet first to change their attitude and then to change their behavior. So in that way, I would call it the biggest social change movement in history. And I would also call it the most urgent, because unless and until a huge percentage of us stops eating animals, this planet is doomed.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And on top of it, people also have to learn to support, you know, organizations like yours. You know, they, and I struggle with that so many times. I'm like, come on, people, Starbucks, you're spending, you know, your $7-$8 on your Starbucks coffee, you know, 5 days a week. Can you give up 2 days of that and maybe throw $100 in your budget, say to the Catskill Animal Sanctuary, to Kickers, whoever that is, you know, how is that going to change your life? And this is the thing. People don't understand that those small little gestures, those small little things will go a long way if done by millions of people. If you had 1 million people who gave you $100 a month, you know, that would change what you
We wouldn't know what to do with all that money. No, right. I mean, that would be, yeah. Well, that would be wonderful and exciting. And we'd probably use a lot of it to help start and guide more sanctuaries.
Exactly. Exactly. And I know you're an author. I know you've written a couple of books. Mm. And are you planning to continue to write books that could potentially tell stories or illustrate life in a sanctuary and those things that you are so well educating people on, who do get the blessing and the fortune of coming to visit you and see your work?
I hope to be able to write more books, Alexia. It's so, you know, it's time consuming. And so what I've done in the last few years, because my last most recent book was published 9 years ago, is contribute chapters to anthologies. I have chapters in a bunch of other books on animal rights, on animal sentience. There's one coming out this summer that I'm a contributor to. So I've been contributing in that way. And I also have my own podcast. So my voice is still out there. It takes a lot of time. This is beautiful and powerful and meaningful, but demanding work. And it takes a lot of time to write a book. So yes. Not in my immediate future. I do have a children's book that I need an illustrator for, actually, that's sort of been on the back burner for a long time. And I do think more frequently about children's books, simply because you can bang out a children's book fairly quickly and have a voice, you know, have a voice that represents the animals that I think could be fun and moving and educational all at once. So maybe a kid's book in the next couple of years, but in terms of, you know, another 250 or 300 page book, that's probably a few years away till I'm on the other side of CAS.
I get it, Kathy. And you know what? Mental note, I'm going to see if I can find you an illustrator, because you actually read my mind. I thought, why not teach the young ones early on about all this? And I think children's book can be extremely effective. So I put in mental notes to try to find you an illustrator.
Ooh, that would be great. This is not a book for young children. This is a book for sort of, even adults I think would enjoy it, but it's a book for maybe really good 10-year-old readers, 10 and up.
Yes. Yeah. We need those. And we, you know, people have coloring books. I mean, people love some, there's so much that can be done, you know, in the cross media sector. There is this lovely lady, and I'm going to give her a shout out just because I feel inspired. Her name is Linda Massey, and her husband is a writer. And when my cat passed away because the vets killed him. It was a horrible experience. I was completely bereft with grief. And he reached out, and his wife, God bless her, she did a portrait of my cat. And, you know, I sent a picture over, and she literally gifted it to me because she wanted to heal my heart. And I never forgot this. And she paints horses, and she paints farm animals and whatever. So I'm thinking, as a thinking illustration, maybe there is a synergy right here between the two of you ladies.
Maybe
she's such a kind soul and heart, and maybe there is a way.
I don't know, writing her name down.
Yeah, yeah, Linda Massey, and I'm gonna send you the web page once I'm done. But I think there could be some synergies, maybe some limited art pieces. I don't know. Yeah. There's so much that can be done for fundraising, and that's why I love this kind of freestyle podcast, because, you know, I'm just doing a shout out. I'm promoting her and I'm promoting you. And it just happened naturally because you all doing such meaningful work. See how hard it is to do a podcast. You have so much going on, as you know, you understand that. Let me ask you something. So how can people come and visit? Like, is there, I went to see Best Friends Animal Sanctuary that I loved. It was an unforgettable experience. Are you a little bit like that, where there's people that they can spend the night and they can stay in nearby places and make a day out of it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're in the Hudson Valley, so it's a beautiful place to hike, to bike, to explore rail trails, to explore old historic homes, to go antiquing, to go there. There's wine trails, a lot to do in our region. And then we also have a fully restored, beautiful bed and breakfast, four bedroom bed and breakfast, built in 1813. Fully restored, lovely, right on the property. So we're open. That's open year round, and people can book that on our website. We also are open on weekends for tours. We're open year round, 7 days a week for private tours by appointment. So there are a lot of ways that people can get involved, including I have a podcast called Herd Around the Barn.
I love that title. I saw that. I was like, this is so great.
You know what it used to be named, and NPR came after me. It used to be named, and I liked this name better, All Beings Considered. But NPR said it was too much like All Things Considered, and they sent their lawyer knocking.
Oh my God.
So anyway, heard of
Heard this one is so much better. Heard.
Yeah. H-E-R-D around the barn. Yeah. So and then starting next year, we're going to have a vegan kind of cooking support group, an ongoing month long where people can sign up and really, really learn how to cook. So a lot going on in the way of the educational part of what we do.
This is so inspiring. I'm so inspired by you, Kathy. And I have to tell you, it's so funny because I'm about to launch a second podcast that I'm doing with my mother, who's my business partner, by the way. She's a big believer that, you know, on extraordinary. She loves the word extraordinary. And, you know, we are going to be doing a series called Chasing the Extraordinary, which is really not just about luxury and wealth, but it's about extraordinary people doing extraordinary things. And you certainly fit the bill, Kathy. So I'm probably going to end up repurposing this and putting this on the other
podcast. That is fine with me.
Well, right. I'm sure you have no objection. We'll make sure that we'll get your permission. But it is exactly that. You know, you're creating an extraordinary experience to people who have come, and you are also almost on the side with teaching them that life can indeed be extraordinary if you choose to see it that way. And if you choose to see animals as the extraordinary, you know, children of God that they are, you know, just like we are. And I absolutely love that. I'll be coming to visit for sure next year.
Oh, please do.
I will.
Please do.
Yes. Yes.
You will likely have a goat climb into your car, or a chicken fall asleep in your lap, or who knows?
Oh my goodness. I am so excited. I mean, I went to see those hogs at Best Friends and they had Hog Town and I just like fell in love with our hogs.
Pigs are amazing. They are extraordinary animals. Smart and strong and willful and expressive. And they've taught us a lot. Pigs have.
Well, I can see why you chose that picture of yourself with your beauty. Is he or she still living, this beautiful picture?
Yes, that was taken a year and a half ago. That's Mario, a pig named Mario. And Mario was surrendered by a man who was a pig farmer who couldn't accept what he was doing to these animals anymore, these brilliant animals, fiercely intelligent. And so he gave up pig farming, but could only find he had hundreds of pigs and could only find sanctuaries to take 8. And so he had to figure out which 8 got to live. And there's a documentary about this you'll be interested to know. Anyway, Mario was the kindest pig. We have 2. We have Audrey, who was supposedly the smartest pig and in this man's mind, and Mario, who was the kindest.
Oh, my goodness. God bless Mario and Audrey, and God bless you. And to all my listeners, I'm not trying to be political. I'm not trying to tell you, well, stop eating. Well, of course, that's a given. If you listen to this podcast and you do a little research, all I'm just trying to say is think about everything that was said here today. Check out the Catskill Animal Sanctuary. Check out Kathy's podcast. Check out her books. Just do some research. Hear those inspiring stories and see what you can do. I'm sure you can do your part. And like Kathy said, it's really all about, we wouldn't eat a cat or a dog, would we? We wouldn't eat our own pets. So why should we making any exceptions with other animals? So food for thought. And with that said, thank you, Kathy. Thank you for being on my show. It's been truly an inspiring conversation. And if you'd like to come on camera real quick, it would be amazing. Yes. Thank you for coming on the show. I'm just so inspired by what you're doing. And if there's any way that we can help through our podcast, through the Eden magazine, through fundraising, I'm definitely going to introduce you to EcoFlex as well. Find you an illustrator, hopefully, and let's keep putting our voices there. Like you said, this is the greatest social
movement in history. It's the biggest social change movement in history. Absolutely, hands down. Yeah.
This is the greatest social movement in history. Be part of the conversation and support us. Thank you all and have a beautiful day. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Heart of Show Business. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend. You can also subscribe, rate, and review the show on your favorite podcast player. If you have any questions or comments or feedback for us, you can reach me directly at theheartofshowbusiness.com.